Okay. One of these early ideas really motivated some stuff building up to calculus was finding double roots. So let me show you an example. First of a double root. Okay, so say we have a cubic like this. For example, it could be x cubed let me write it in factored form. There's a double root. Now, this double root is also a local minimum. Okay. Now, Fermat, right, he was the guy that's more interested in saying, okay, given from, you know, formulas in algebra, he wants to study the geometry of the curves, right? And Descartes' view was, you know, the other one mentioned contrast. He would start with the curve more generally, and then he would get a formula for it, and, you know, continue to study it. In the end, they're both going to be learning about curves. Now, what does Fermat observe? Okay, so you have local minimum. Now, what if we shifted the curve, right? It looks like, for example, this curve. And there's some local max m there, right? So if we imagine shifting the curve, right, that should be a double root. Now, these double roots have been studied before in the context of counting solutions to a cubic, say. Solve this, of course, is we would take the derivative and figure out where the derivative is zero, besides that 2, which we already know about. We'd find the other place where the derivative is zero. I didn't have the derivative exactly. But looking for a double root, and find something awfully similar. Because how do you find that double root? I mean, you don't know the number m. You want to pick the m to make it have a double root. And then you can find what that root is. How could you do that without a derivative? Kind of backwards than the way we do it. We would take the derivative, figure out that there's going to be a horizontal. We'd figure out the number where there's a horizontal tangent, then we'd plug it into the function to get the m. Huh? Ramaz's idea is to say that you don't know where m is, but you could imagine making other values, right? So you have some other number here. Let's call it n, okay? And for a choice of n, you get those two roots there. Let's call them, so maybe x and x plus e. Okay. Now, we have then, since they're on the line there, we would have x times 2 minus x squared is going to be the same as x plus e times 2 minus x plus e squared. Okay. So next we want to expand that out and sorry, I have to run to the bathroom, so excuse me. Plus e cubed. So we have this, so we have some, so we have some height n where, we have two roots. And n is not m, but the idea is we're going to get a relationship between the two roots x and x plus e. And what we want to do is we want to find a relationship where we can do something sensible even when e is zero. Now in this one, some things cancel out. Your x cubed cancel from both sides of the equation there. And what else cancels? A lot of stuff actually. Good. Negative 4x squared, 4x squared, 4x, 4x. Okay. So actually all you have is a bunch of stuff that, everything that's not a multiple of e is actually dropped out. Okay. Now, Fermat says that that this is a geometric relationship between x and e, right? You can think of this as a, you know, an equation describing a curve, right, with x and e coordinates. And divide everything by e there, okay? And you have another curve, right? This describes a continuous curve. Okay. So if this equation is true for E near zero, it is also true for E equal to zero. Okay? So it's an informal geometric justification, I mean, what we'd call taking a limit as E goes to zero. Okay? All right, so what happens if you make E equal to zero, right? That's what you want, right? If E is zero, then the two roots are the same. You've got your double root. You could imagine, you know, I mean, if you actually look at this, this is actually a quadratic equation. I mean, this is a conic section in terms of x and e, right? This relationship here. I had, so I mean, it's, it, you know, whatever it is, it could be an ellipse, hyperbola. If I had used a quadratic here instead of a cubic, right, then the relationship would have come out even simpler. It would have come out a linear equation. It would have just been a line, right? But you believe that if you're moving along a curve, whether it's the arm of a hyperbola or along an ellipse or along a parabola or along a line, as your e-coordinate, you know, is getting close to zero, right, you know, this is just a general relationship that will work for all the e-coordinates. Okay. So by having this tight connection between you know, algebra and geometry now, it helps. It occurs to him to take this step here, right? Because see what I've done here? We divided by e, right? And then we set e equal to zero. If you're just thinking algebra, that doesn't make any sense, right? How can you, after dividing by e, and thereby assuming that e is not zero, then say, okay, make e equal to zero? So all this is despite having divided by. Okay, so what happens when e is zero? Zero equals 4 plus 2x plus 3x squared. Assuming I did my algebra right, I probably didn't. I think I need to distribute a 4 here, right? Should be 8. Difference here. I think it's going to make some difference. I'm going to have okay. So that's actually an 8. Okay. All right. And so, yeah. All right. We can solve this. We can complete the square or something. Right? They knew quadratic formulas and completing the square. So using methods pretty similar to theirs now, we can solve this quadratic, right? Okay, so you want to have half of 8/3 is 4/3, right? So you'd have 4/3 plus. So you need to take and give a 4/3 squared, I think. And that's how I complete the square. I know that coefficient there, cut in half and. So you have, let's see, I think this you can simplify a little bit. It's 4/3 minus 4/3, 4/3. So I think it's negative 1/3 times 4/3. So, okay. So if you move that, so this is I guess, four ninths. Not getting the right answer at the end because I probably still did some algebra.
It's because it's the -4.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you see me make a mistake, yeah, I guess tell me sooner rather than later, right? Okay. So, wait. Negatives in there. Solution happens at 2/3. So M, that local max, is 2/3 times 2 minus 2/3 squared. Now, well, what did we do here? We really had solve that equation here, right? And I did some canceling, so I got 0 equals f of x minus f of x plus e. And so we subtracted, and we divided by e here, and we looked at what happened when you just plug in e equals 0. Geometrically makes is a sensible thing to do. You you believe that it should still be a true thing, right? Because Fermat sees this as a relationship between any two roots, x and x plus e, right? Of the equation, you know, n equals, you know, this polynomial, right? For any two roots, they have to satisfy this relationship. And so, even if, so geometrically, this relationship should stay true even if we're at, even if we get the constant term n to the point where they become the same, you know, double root. And of course, this is just the derivative, right? Of course, Fermat didn't, when he was doing this calculation, he didn't know our much faster way of finding the derivative, right? What do we know? We know how to take that derivative. It'd be 4 minus 8x. That's a lot, right? Just using the power rule on, right? On each of these, it's a lot faster, right? 4 is the derivative of this, negative 8x is the derivative of this, 3x squared is the derivative of that. Exactly what we got over there. So we should take some pictures of this. Now the name for this technique of Fermat's here is, you know, ab equality, right? Kind of like not quite equal, but adequate. Called it an ab equality. Close enough. That's this idea of near zero, right? But he got this relationship from E not being zero. It near to zero. He has other uses of this idea, which is essentially the idea of taking a limit to zero. He uses it to find tangents to curves, for example. another thing that Infamon does is finding tangents. Essentially to you know this. So you have some curve here. Okay. So there's some formula. Curve. And we make it. I want to actually fit it from the mistake. So say there's a length of tangent there. Okay. So what do you do here? Here. That's our y. And on the other hand, we have over here, you have f at x plus e. This length, x plus e here. All right. Now, the reasoning here is basically this. See, similar triangles there. I gotta label things more carefully, don't I? Okay. This should not quite be x so much as so where the where the tangent line crosses the axis. That's what's called the subtangent. Not the same as where the axis starts. So it's like this. So, consider this. Thank you. I'm basically, I want to solve for t here, right? If I can find this length t, then combine that with a given, you know, given the y there and the x, right, I can get, you know, whatever information I want about this tangent line, right? And just a little bit of algebra here. And the trick is that this is a difference of squares, right? So they're called the conjugate trick sometimes. Right? All right. So this is just going to be x plus e. This is going to be x. Times e equals e times square root of x times this stuff. So the thing here is, right, the curve is right here, right? Which is why, you know, if you're going from here to here, right, on the curve, right, that's exactly f of x, right? But when you go a little bit further up to the tangent line, that's only approximate. But from what I was thinking is, okay, if the e is small, right, and then these are close together, there's not much difference. Alright. And so the thinking is, make e be smaller and smaller. I've shown. So t should be close to this, and okay, so what if you make e equal to 0 now, right? You might not see any connection here with our modern way of doing it, where we get a derivative, and we usually are interested in a slope. But this thing t is this subtangent, right? But let's draw another picture here. Okay, so. Here's, to help us see it, it'll give us the modern x and y axes, right? Okay. So let's say we have some distance x here, right? So another x over there, this should be the t equals 2x, right? So we're saying that's how the tangent line looks. Okay. This right here is the square root of x. Okay. The slope is this. Right, which which you may recognize as the derivative of the square root of x. Now, of course, this kind of result, right, that if you have a parabola, the fact that you'll have this kind of relation between the so-called subtangent and this right here, right, this width, right?
See if I can draw a good parabola here.
So you've got this relationship between the that t and x there. This was already known to ancient Greek, right? But Fermat has a new method, right? That's the significance, right? I remember our author, right? Whenever Fermat is doing something with adequality, Fermat writes the, our author Katz writes a little squiggly equal sign. I mean, this is just, a special case. As long as Fermat can do the algebra, he doesn't have to work with just parabolas. So he can reprove some ancient Greek results, but he gets more general methods, right? And where does this generality come from? Well, the motivation is you want to consider simple algebraic formulas that make new curves, right? Curves the ancient Greeks hadn't considered. Like, what about y equals x to the fifth? Something like that. Simple, algebraically speaking. So you want to be able to find, tangent lines for it, do all the geometry about the curve y equals x to the fifth or something. You have to go beyond the specialized methods that work for specialized cases like the conic sections. And with algebra now, some more general methods are being developed. So, Fermat's tendency to just study all sorts of curves that are suggested by algebra. Leads to the need for more general methods. Because if it's interesting to find tangents to conic sections, maybe it's interesting to find tangents to other new curves. Now, interestingly, Descartes also had a method for finding tangents. And it boils down to the same idea that there should be a double root. So, of course, we know with circles, you draw a radius of a circle. Ancient Greeks, of course, it is, right? Perpendicular to the tangent, okay? So, if you have a curve, if you can find a circle, tangent to your curve, right? So the curve and the circle are the same tangents. Right? Find a circle with the same tangent line. Right. How can we do that? Well, there's infinitely many circles, right, that are tangent to a given curve at a given point. So you have some freedom in the circle you pick. We're just going to use the coordinate axis, right? So we have our curve, x is equal to y. Some point on the curve. Okay, you want to find a tangent line. Okay, so you imagine, so that is, let's have a circle tangent to the curve, so it has the same tangent as that. Okay, so that should be a line. The radius of this circle, right, it should be at a right angle with the tangent line, right? So we've got a right angle there. Alright, and so you could pick a center of a circle anywhere along this line, but we're going to pick where it's on the coordinate axis. That'll be the center of our circle. So the mystery then is, okay, what's r, right? If you could figure out r, then you could figure out this part too, right? This would be Pythagorean theorem, this has got to be r squared minus y squared quantity square root, right? There's no problem there. So we just get r. Okay. All right. Let me call this some other letters. I almost can't tell what the Z say. So, The idea is imagine now somehow, you know, take R as known, right? Whatever the R is, you could imagine solving the equation for Z, right? You could imagine if you changed Z, if you shifted this around, right? You could like in this picture, if we move the circle too far to the left, we'll hit the curve at 2 points instead of just one. Move it too far to the right, we won't hit the curve at all in this picture. So if we have things just right, if we're at the magic spot, then what we really have is a double root if we write out an equation for Z here. Okay? So in terms of that Z, let's really go in here. So we have the coordinates of our circle here. It's got to have Y squared plus Z squared R squared. Now, doesn't look like a double root to me yet. Now it's an equation. Y. this would be a... So, one and two, the fact you have a double root gives you another equation. The coefficients have to be a certain way. So these give, the fact that you have this equation, the circle equation, and the fact that it's a double root, get two equations for R and W. Two equations you can actually solve for R and W. And this is similar to, to Fermat with his double roots. And we don't quite have derivatives. Remember, we have our power rule and so on. And so there's this nice kind of precursor to the power rule. It's all in terms of double roots. So, like, if you look at page... It's a little bit... Did anybody read this one? Huber. Huber is it. H-U-D-D-E, Hudd's rule. It's on page 512. That's an interesting precursor to the power rule. Complicated state. It's about, if this one polynomial has double roots, then you take this other polynomial where you modify some coefficients according to this an arithmetic progression, then this polynomial also has a root. And this is a nice one. Think back to calculus 3. Right? How do you find a tangent line for an implicit curve? Right? Use partial derivatives. Right? The way I teach it, I would say something like this. If on the curve, you know, 0 is equal to the total differential, which is, you know, partial f, partial x, times a dx plus partial f, partial y times a dy. Right? And so, of course, if you solve for dy dx, you get negative partial f, partial x, over partial f, partial y. And again, it involves, you know, very similar to Fermat's ideas about adducibility. You have some quantity that is not zero, and you have a double root, you know, that kind of thing, and you do some nice things, like you have that, like that quantity e, you're able to divide by e at one point, make stuff nicer. So at some point you're treating E like not zero, and then later you plug in zero. So these are all getting very close to our derivative ideas about slopes and tangents. And I guess since we're close to 4:45. Next time I'll talk about areas and volumes, other part of chapter 15. Any questions?